You found yourself back at the start.
All right. Welcome back to Back at the Start. How's everybody doing today?
Good. How about you?
Doing well. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself so they know who's talking today?
This is Aridin Essie or Aridinsk.
I am Sapoin.
And I'm Logan. I'm Logan Pars on pretty much all social media.
All right. So today we've got an episode and a half to talk about. I don't know about y'all, but I was really, really excited when I saw the tweet Zach sent out about bringing the horror back to Kolok. So that got me really hyped.
I imagine it wasn't so much just the horror, but given your particular specialty, also the reference to Tin Candles.
Well, yes and no, but one of the reasons why I loved Tin Candles so much was the horror aspect. So the fact that he was going to blend that back with Kolok, that got me really excited. So, all right, let's just get into it. Let's get our recap on here. So, we started off a little more tame than last time, but we still jumped right into the middle of it.
Yeah, we had certainly another view of this strange drug operation that seems to be playing a large role, I'm guessing, this season.
Well, I mean, absolutely. The fact that it's using the flesh that we know was grown to do these deals, that's a big thing.
Well, do we know if it's using the flesh? So far, we only know that it's using the bone, which I think is an interesting shift.
Well, I just meant that they're using the flesh that was there, so to speak. Not necessarily the flesh itself, but what was the flesh that we knew of.
Do we know that if it's the same thing? I mean, I'm guessing it must be similar since all the references to pounds of flesh and to previous Synchronian employees. But I don't know whether this is any different or not, but...
Yeah, it may not be the exact same, but I think they're using the same process by which to procure it, if that makes sense.
Probably.
And so, you know, we got our little intro. We got to see exactly how careful they are with the various pills that they're distilling down from these bones.
Yeah, the one thing that, especially this intro, as opposed to the other one, really struck me is the level of kind of detail and specificity that is being used in this. Everything is measured and determined down to the exact like inch and second, and the level that this requires. This is nothing that was kind of thrown together. This is something that has a lot of care, attention, and organization. It's meticulous. This is not a simple thing. This is something that's been done. If we don't know, it's been done many times to get it down to this level.
Right. Or, you know, they've been practicing before and figuring out exactly how the best way is to distill this down. But something is going on that they've got this process and they've got it exact. So it'll be very interesting to see where that goes in the future. I don't really know where it's headed. I know we saw the effects, which we'll get into a little bit later. And those were very, very interesting.
I think the one other thing I noticed about two things, really. One is the branding used for this fruit was a cartoon crocodile, which is something that we saw kind of on the TV behind Billy in the last episode. So I wonder if that was a reference. The other is the kind of oversight of Brooke Greer and the mention of not only Clarity, but is this the first time we've ever had a Clarity that was beyond Clarity Prime that was specified? Because it was said this was Clarity 6.
Well, I had to wonder if Clarity 6 is the same Clarity that got killed by Brooke Greer.
It's possible, who was the mother of AJJA.
Who also was there.
Right. So that's definitely something going forward to pay attention to, 100%. So I don't know if we've had one identified specifically. They've always just been the Clarity clones so far.
Yeah, that's the one thing that stood out to me is that this was the first time I thought I heard any of them being specified. Whether that has any meaning or not, well, it's Kolok. So at this point, I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, there are no accidents.
All right. But yeah, no, going beyond the idea of the numbered clarities, I wonder if that's Zach's way of reminding us that there are more than like one or two, that there's more than Clarity Prime there.
Yeah, that's also a very good possibility. We know now that they're using the blood of Clarity to grow these fruit delivery systems.
Honestly, I figure we're going to find out more and more about Clarity, especially now that the kids, that the Radar, have become acquainted with her beyond, you know, just knowing that, you know, Clarity Prime was the Gorgon or something like that. Now that they've seen a Clarity, now that they've had those interactions, and a couple of them have those memories, I think we're going to find out a little bit more about that link back to Ten Candles, because those are part of the only real ties to the Ten Candles universe that still exist because of how the multiverse was created. So after we got our look into this new production business, this extended view into this meticulous operation, we jump forward a little bit. We get back in touch with our Radar. What'd y'all think of that? Was that what you were expecting, given the cliffhanger we saw in episode one, or were you expecting just to jump right back in?
You never know with Zach. It could be kind of one or the other, whether he wants to kind of jump ahead a little bit or whether he kind of wants to take us in. Like, I mean, given how it ended, I guess it's not terribly surprising where we started, especially given kind of what follows.
Definitely. And, you know, just sort of watching how all of that unraveled, it was so interesting. And then having everything sort of at play there, having everything, the Radar trying to come to terms with the fact that, you know, Tibby's still in the police station, that they don't really have a plan. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do. Like, that was just a great moment to watch them all have this all collective, oh crap moment.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think this is kind of a, they've been in a lot of strange situations, but in many respects, this is kind of a completely different one, because a lot of their kind of immediate impulses aren't things that are terribly going to work well in this case.
Exactly. They've been dealing with non-government entities. They haven't been dealing with someone being detained by the police. Yes, we had the FBI involvement, but Bucket was most assuredly on their side from the very beginning. So they had an ally. They had someone to go back to.
Also, in this case, it's not just a misunderstanding. This was a literal death. It was a mistake. Sure, we know that. But from the outside point of view, Tibby murdered an officer.
Absolutely. You know, that officer died. Now, Tibby didn't, his mind wasn't in it. He didn't intend for that to be the outcome. But he absolutely caused that harm. And he absolutely caused the harm to Mike that they're trying to deal with, that they're trying to figure out how to treat him for. And so you have that. You have that just heavy weight. Because this isn't something that, unless Billy decides he's going to completely alter everyone's point of view, they can really fix.
And we've kind of been seeing these bits and pieces of, I'm guessing, Billy's guilt coming through. This constant kind of refrain of the voice. I mean, at least I associate with what Three Eyes, which we know is a kind of almost a manifestation of Billy, keep saying, why? And the showing up of these faceless that seem to be his victims from other universes. So it's interesting to see how that kind of plays out.
Oh, definitely it will. And, you know, I think that's really a lot of the issue, is that Billy was fairly lackadaisical using his powers last season. He used them regularly.
Oh yeah, completely. Like, I mean, like he mentioned kind of later in this episode, he didn't see them. To him, he didn't see them. They weren't in front of him. So it wasn't something, it was easy for him to kind of wave away.
Exactly. And so now he's having to face that reality of, no, this is something that I actually did. This is something I have to understand about myself and move forward with. And I think that's why we're going to see more of Billy being really hesitant, even though his power could provide an out for Tibby. I think we're going to see him being more and more hesitant to not use it. And I think if ever we see him use it, it would be in the most dire of situations. A lot like how Impeg has been sort of working on being able to handle situations without using her power.
Yeah, the whole slap thing, I think, is pretty brilliant.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's also interesting that we're seeing almost a new problem for Mallory in this sudden popularity and interest, which is something the Mallory that we kind of had seen kind of briefly in kind of the teens in space stuff was a Mallory that was like, yeah, love to have be the center of attention, love to have all this kind of focus and attention. But now that he's getting it, it's kind of like, I don't know if this is really what I want.
Well, I mean, he's a teenage boy. He's going to put on the bravado for a lot of things. And I think he's a very, I don't necessarily want to say scared, but he's very alone. And he's got a lot of weight on his shoulder that most 18-year-olds don't necessarily have. And so I think that's playing into it as well.
Oh, yeah, completely. Especially kind of tying back into his kind of learning to try and deal with the loss of his father. So like you said, the loneliness in that case would just be amped up. Then everything that happened kind of with Marcus to him, it would just kind of be hammering at him pretty hard, I would imagine.
Exactly. So, you know, that was one of the things is that he talked about how Marcus abandoned him. And I think we're going to see more and more of that come out. Is that, you know, he was abandoned for a significant period of time. And so I think we're going to see that play up more and more. And while he may want the attention, he may not ultimately like it, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to be one of those things, or it may not be what he thought it was, which I think is, again, another real theme of Kolok is be careful what you wish for when you get it. It may not be what you hoped it would be.
Right, or there's going to be something horrible attached to it that you're now going to have to deal with. So it'll definitely be an interesting thing to watch as this all evolves.
Yeah, I think this season's going to have to do a lot with consequences, especially the stuff that they did last season.
We leave the police station. We follow our dear Radar to the video store of all places.
Just kind of what I liked. It's kind of that, in even though in all this, you have something that's kind of very simple, as in M realizing that she's now late for her shift at work. Like, I mean, that is something exactly. so kind of relatable to almost anyone, very kind of small townish, and it's kind of nice in that sense that it also kind of reconnects you to that world.
Absolutely, 100%. It gives you that touchstone to really be able to identify with them. And so we get to the video store and we're introduced to Cheese. Oh, Cheese. I have to say, I really, really enjoyed this guest character. He was definitely a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. He was kind of almost perfect in that role of kind of coming in. And it seemed like it fit perfectly in kind of all of it. You have that, both that and then the Charlie and Charlie. Nicknames seem to be a thing that keep kind of coming up. And generally, it seems a lot of people that have them don't seem to like them.
Well, I mean, typically, you don't get a nickname because you pick it out or because it's something you like. It gets given to you one way or the other.
That's true, especially in high school and that surround.
Exactly. You know, it's one of those things. High school is not necessarily a great place. You're going to have some interesting things that happen, and you may just have to deal with it, no matter whether or not you enjoy it. And so we go on, and we get introduced, and the banter back and forth between the Kolok Radar and Cheese and Imbeth's boss. Like all of that, those interplays were so great, and they were so much fun just to watch, because it made it sound like a group of teenagers. It honestly just, I could have pictured my students having those exact type of conversations.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing you expect from people kind of walking into work that have kind of known each other for a little bit. Again, kind of gives you that kind of grounding in small, kind of small town lifestyle.
And then we get to Cassandra.
I think you might be jumping ahead a little bit.
Well,
first we have the weirdness that is the switching of this movie store being from the one that you and I might think of to suddenly every single one of these videotapes is now completely white with just the name of the video in black letters. And not just the boxes, but posters are all now just a white background and black text. And oddly, the only people that seem to notice this change are the Radar.
Right. And so, you know, that's very, I don't even know. It's obviously a very strange thing to happen. It's something that's completely out of the ordinary. But is it really that out of the ordinary for Kolok?
Well, that is a very good question. Like, I mean, Kolok is a strange thing. What made me wonder is did something trigger this? because Zach did mention that yesterday everything was normal.
And honestly, it could be the same thing that triggered the event at the lake, triggered the change.
That was one of the things I was wondering. Another thing I wonder, since we don't know, is whether, as we're kind of about to get to, whether this strange videotape, whether its appearance is what kind of triggered almost a cascade, maybe.
I don't know if it would necessarily trigger the cascade. I think it's part of whatever triggered everything. Whatever's causing these anomalies, as they were mentioned later.
Yeah, at this point we don't know much, but I get the feeling that it's something we're probably going to see further down the line.
And, I mean, the only reason that I'm hesitant to call the tape appearing being part of that necessarily as the catalyst or as anything like that is because we do know that the ship survived and that they used it to build different things. And we know that Davina was still intact at the bottom of the lake. We also know that Shiloh and Ah had a hand in building that ship back in the Ten Candles verse. So it's possible that that recording made its way onto the ship, onto the archive that way.
Yeah, I mean, you would certainly know far more about Ten Candles than I would. Like, I mean, would that, like the whole kind of time nature of it, I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things I was wondering. We don't really know exactly what is an anomaly and what constitutes an anomaly. Is it something from any multiverse that's not this? Does it only come from ones that supposedly no longer exist? Is that what makes it specifically an anomaly?
Possibly. I mean, but that's the only reason why I'm hesitant to call the tape as part of the anomaly. It's just because that there is a way that that information could theoretically still exist in the Kolok world.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I would think that it specifically would be the anomaly or an anomaly is kind of, as we find out later when Cassandra arrives to kind of pick it up, she mentions that she was there, couldn't have another anomaly floating around there. And since she was there specifically for the tape, that makes me think that she was there specifically for it.
Oh, absolutely. And that's a part of it. I'm just saying, like, that was my first reaction upon seeing it. Because we hadn't gotten to Cassandra yet.
Yeah.
Just the existence of that information, that recording, wasn't in and of itself something that was all that shocking to me. But then, of course, what did sort of throw me completely off my game was Cassandra, just because of how unique she was.
Oh, yeah, fair. I mean, it's one of those things where, at this point, I learned not to assume anything for certain. A lot of mine are more suppositions and trying to make links, half of which I'm guessing are probably going to be very far from the truth, and Zach will probably chuckle when he hears.
Oh, trust me, I have no doubt that Zach has done nothing but laugh at every theory I've thrown out in my entire time trying to guess his plots, but I'm okay with that.
The one thing that this, and I don't think we've specifically mentioned it, but the video we're referring to is the council introduction video that was originally used in the town volume of Ten Candles.
Yeah.
And what made me kind of wonder and think is that if they made that, is there a Kolok version of this introduction video that perhaps, since we finally did get a name for the character that Ray Weiss has shown up in as Aaron Cedar.
Right.
Perhaps he made it. Is there a Kolok version? And since we know that Aaron Cedar was looking for something in Merle Jenkins' stuff, could it be that this, the Kolok version of this council introduction video, is what he was looking for in that?
I think that's absolutely 100% an accurate decision or an accurate supposition to say. I mean, you don't want a tape like that being exposed to the world. Be it from the Ten Candles verse, be it from Kolok. So absolutely, if they think that there's any chance that Mallory's going to go through and basically find this video that exposes all of their secrets, they're 100% going to try to recover that as quickly as possible.
Oh yeah, I mean, especially when you saw how Aaron Cedar responded as soon as Mallory said, well, you know, I was thinking of getting a little bit more involved.
Right, and he's just like, what? That was very, very unique just to watch them sort of have that moment. So do you want to talk about the video a little bit and go down into some of the symbology there, or should we save that for a little bit later?
Oh, well, we're at the video now, so if you wanted to do that, you're the 10 candles lore master, so.
Oh, you call me that. All you're going to do is make Zach laugh so hard he pees himself.
Well, compared to most of the rest of us, I'd say you're probably the one I know of.
All right, so we can provide a link to the actual video in the bottom, but basically it goes through and it provides a breakdown of what all of these different pieces are, what all of these different things were in 10 Candles. It mentions the gate, the heart, the vermin, the farm and the blood, mentions the fawn, who we find out is a specific actor, the voice. All of these different things are specific characters at work in what was Kolob, and arguably what I would imagine is still at work, at least to some extent, here in Kolob, because we have seen at least some important things still have a vague correlation, like the bull. The bull being the sheriff is one thing that I think has stayed the same.
Well, we also, one of the things we did kind of also see in that opening is almost references in a similar nature. The pushers, the garden, the eye.
Right.
Very kind of evocative, but not over the specific titles.
Yeah.
We've also seen something that can't remember if it was exactly referred to as the heart, but something deep in the mines that seemed...
Right, and we know that from 10 Candles Volume 9 that was where a piece of Phobos was. So if it's not a piece of Phobos, maybe it's one of the first portals to Phobos, sort of like a crack that was left when the ship crashed, that can serve as sort of that opening portal that they can then use via Mammon, via whatever else is at work to make those deals, to use that power source.
Their kind of first contact, if you will.
Absolutely. And so the video basically breaks down who all of these different things are. And in 10 Candles, after the video was played, they actually have a question session and they talk very quickly to Werner. So Werner, I know many people won't necessarily remember, but he was the one who was in charge of connecting Mike Ginn's character and our lovely, lovely Kate Elliott's character in to be able to actually see the council meeting that they got to spy on. And so he actually does like a question and answer session with them. He says, you know, the bull is the sheriff. The totem is Kolob. You know, the loop is the cycle of everything. And we saw the closure of that loop at the end of 10 Candles. The fawn is mentioned is the principal, part of the school. The voice is the preacher. The temple is the church. With the hive being the people of Kolob. And then they mentioned the gate. The gate is a doorway leading somewhere, pushing you out or bringing something in. I think the gate is exactly what's still in the mind.
Possible. I mean, jumping ahead a little again, had we had any mention of the sheriff before this? The fact that the sheriff's name is Cody Bull, I'm guessing...
It's a little on the nose.
Again, whether that it has some significance or whether that is Zach kind of having a little fun.
Right. But the fact that we have all of these, you know, the video and making reference to things that we have seen in Kolob, at least in part, because we've seen Merle Jenkins, who would have been the fawn in this universe. He's dead now. Does that mean that they're looking for someone else to fill that similar position?
Or do they have slightly different positions?
Right.
Because, I mean, that one was all based around religion, whereas we know Kolob is more based around science and technology.
Making deals, yeah.
So would they have slightly different positions?
Well, I would absolutely argue that they're going to have different positions, different things like that, but you're still going to want someone to be in charge of educating the next group. So you're still going to want someone in that position of power at the school.
True.
So it'll be interesting to see how much further down the rabbit hole we go now that this video is there, now that these people have seen the video, whether or not they'll go looking for evidence of anything similar in their area. I don't know. We've seen the radar ignore a lot of stuff. I don't know if I could ignore a video like this, but at times we've seen them sort of focus in on just their friends and ignore other things. So it's possible we may never get the answers we're speculating for.
Well, I mean, we kind of learned that in season one. There are a number of threads that kind of got left by the wayside.
Exactly. So we've been talking about her. We've mentioned her a couple of times. Everyone's favorite bug lady. They watch the video. They see this Aaron Cedar talking about this other town, Kolob, not Kolok. And then in
I think this is...
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think this is the first time we've actually learned anything about this character, that they are apparently the owner of Kolok Wine and Collectibles. Whether that's directly connected to the winery or not, or something different, I think is interesting.
I mean, I think it's probably guaranteed that it's connected to the winery. You know, it just, like, the winery is probably where they make the wine. The Wine and Collectibles is probably the shop, the front that they use to sell it.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, what else do they collect?
I mean,
it's my question.
Well, that may be something that we're going to have to rely on the radar to go find out for us. And so we have the exchange with Cassandra. And then we get to Mickey. I have so many questions. I have so, so many questions that I know will never get answered on any This Will Be Deleted.
Well, I guess we could really say that we go to the McKees.
Right. We have a quick little jaunt into our favorite strangely accented man in his basement, where there are multiple Mickeys dealing with whether or not they're going to have control over the same body. And ultimately, I think they end up in Prime A's body. I think that's fairly apparent, given the fact that she has the attachments into her spine that allow her to walk.
Yeah, the exoskeleton is a little bit of a hint.
Just a little bit of an on-the-nose kind of clue. But I think it's interesting that I think at least one or two times throughout the episode, it's not really clear which ego is speaking.
Yeah, I get the sense that, as I know Techie had mentioned in some of our prior discussions about kind of how he thought that it was started off as being kind of Prime B Mickey that was kind of piloting, if you will, since it seemed very normal, didn't seem to know much about the exoskeleton whatnot, and then at a certain point, Prime A Mickey took control. And that's why Mickey mentioned that she could use her abilities to kill, which is something that Prime B Mickey had been hiding, went so far as to actually remove that memory from everyone.
Exactly. And so I think it's very interesting to try to watch going forward exactly which Mickey is going to be in control at what point. And I think that willingness to use the power is probably going to be one of our only hints.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing I was wondering is the kind of connections to this white space that is mentioned. Could that itself be some part of the grotto? Like, they mentioned Sky being stuck in the TV.
Right.
Something similar. I wonder whether this mysterious person, who all we know is a fake name, has some kind of an ability to trap an ego in some part of the grotto, and then it's a swap.
I mean, and that's also a callback to an imagery that was utilized in Tin Candles. The White Room features especially in Volume 3, the one that Shubble actually guested on in Tin Candles. They were constantly going to a white room. And given that that was a direct interaction with part of Phobos, I don't think it's that much of a jump to say that having them go to that white room, having that white room imagery, is a direct sort of callback or hint that this person that's got the Mickey in a cage is tied to Mammon, is tied to the grotto, is tied to Phobos in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, we've got all these different threads and they didn't start to come together. And it just becomes very, very fast paced from here on out after we get introduced to Mickey.
Yeah. And then we, as you mentioned, we have kind of Cassandra show up and that throws this whole other wrinkle in and these anomalies. I mean, which makes me wonder, I wonder how often this has shown up. Is this the first anomaly to show up? I get the sense that it's not, or is this just the first that we're aware of?
I think that's a very good point. I want to say it may be the first anomaly that we know of, but it also may be the first anomaly because we've not seen anything like what happened at the lake happen before now.
Yeah, I mean, or it could be that what happened at the lake has no connection to the anomalies. Like Zach had said, there is more than one thing going on in Kolok, so...
Absolutely. I think it's just too big of a coincidence for the video store to be fine the day before, have everything happen at the lake, and then change.
Yeah, the timing is a little suspect. I mean, the only other thing I could think of is it possible that Rachel's diary could count as an anomaly?
I mean, I think that could easily be explained as they just went and dug it up.
I'm not talking about them digging it up. I'm talking about its creation and the fact that it survived after Maimon's relevance wipe.
No, absolutely. That's an interesting question. I don't know if we know enough about anomalies to say so, but I think that there is definitely something going on with that. Because...
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I don't know. It's the only thing I could... I was trying to go back and think of anything that we saw that could perhaps qualify.
Well, I would say the diary is a little bit different because the diary at least existed in this universe where the VHS tape is from a universe that doesn't even exist anymore.
But yeah, no, that's a good point that it something is definitely going on, but maybe, or maybe there's more than one type of anomaly. We, like you said, Sepuin, we just don't know enough about the anomalies yet.
Exactly. And, you know, we also know that Rachel had dealings with Clarity. So it could be that there's somehow that Clarity was able to use something that she has or her connection to everything to preserve the diary, meaning that it's not even necessarily an anomaly. It's just something that was preserved. We don't know.
The other thing I found interesting about Cassandra was the fact that apparently she knows a lot about Kolok. I mean, Tibby and Mike isn't terribly surprising. I'm sure that's been pretty widely known. But her mentioning specifically these tunnels under the police station, that is another level of kind of specific knowledge that I thought was interesting. And I mean, again, I'm sure it's probably not, but the first thing it made me think of when they mentioned it was the tunnels that they used in Undecided a lot.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that those tunnels exist here, that might be also another anomaly. Because we do know this was a former mining town, but the fact that there just happens to be a tunnel directly under the police station.
Especially when... that we will learn as the episode continues, has a piece of ship metal above one of the grates with one of the symbols.
Exactly. That's just a little bit too much coincidence for me. Though I think the reason that Cassandra may have more knowledge, may have this outside knowledge, may have this outside view, be able to collect the anomalies, if you will, is because she's an agent of another sort of entity. We already know that Phobos and Harmonia exist.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one of the things I was wondering. From what we understand, the grotto is a large place, and we know that Maimon is just one part of it. So, I mean, I've long kind of wondered and supposed that there must be other groups or entities that exist. Perhaps she's part of some kind of a not... police force, but some kind of group that's tasked with collecting and removing these anomalies from different places before they cause issues.
It's possible. Like this, there's some sort of early warning system, maybe, and that they can send out agents to collect these anomalies to contain them if they want. I don't know. It's definitely something to keep in mind going forward. I mean, one of the first things that sort of jumped out at me is just given how Cassandra had the centipedes, given how she had those bugs, it immediately made me think of Haster. And we know that in one of the universes that they visited, that there was a cult of Haster. So I'm wondering if maybe Haster has sent an agent to try to help clean up, maybe even make a way in the world for him to get some influence here. I don't know. But I think the association with Haster, with bugs, with all of those things, I could be completely wrong here. And you know what? 90% of the time I am.
Well, I mean, given the fact that, as you said, we did see this other universe where there seemed to be not only this cult, but it almost seemed like the radar, or at least members of the radar, were part of it, which kind of tied it back almost to Kolok. We don't know what it was called at that point. It does kind of give a bit more weight. I mean, I'm sure half of our theories are all going to be wrong, but half the fun of it is just trying to figure it out.
Absolutely. And so, you know, we see this. We have this quick sort of interaction with her that unnerves everyone. And then we get into the last sort of exciting sort of charge to the end after Cassandra leaves the store.
Well, we have the one other thing I'm kind of curious about before we kind of get to the tunnels is the kind of strange almost interlude that we got immediately after the break with this weird, I don't know whether it was a person or a creature that seemed to be, at first we just know that they were examining the old school where we know that the FBI had been staged out of, which seemed to be almost hunting, almost as if like a sniffing dog almost. And then we find out that it's looking for the Great Diviner, which we know is something that Billy has been referred to.
Absolutely. And part of me wonders if that's connected back to the Kids on Bikes universe, back to Undecided more heavily, given how keen they were in that universe to get their hands on the Great Diviner.
And we do know that that's where kind of Billy's ego comes from. So, I mean, it is a fair supposition.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where that goes, but I think that's a direct sort of relation back to that Undecided, to Kids on Bikes. And another great point that Techie actually brought up previously is that, is it possible that that could have been the doctor from season one that was talking to Billy, saying that he wasn't ready yet? Maybe now he is? I don't know.
I guess that's possible. I mean, I got the sense that this was someone that was hunting, looking for the Great Diviner, not someone that had already found him.
Well, it could be that, and it's very possible that it is someone completely different, but it could be that maybe Billy wasn't ready to be the Great Diviner either, and maybe now he might be. We don't know.
Yeah, this seemed like a new person. He had a completely different description than everyone else. I think he said he was a guy with red hair in a red suit.
Could it be that this person is somehow connected to the strange red alien? We don't know strange people that we know had been working with Mrs. Wu.
Yeah.
Just kind of, since we know that they were interested in Billy, and just the kind of connection of color, since color seems to be something that plays a role in Kolok.
Absolutely. And I mean, that color association, that's definitely something that Zach does not change lightly. So if a color is mentioned, it usually has a meaning that stays throughout. So I'm very much looking forward to see how everything sort of evolves, given all these different pieces that we now have involved, that we now have active.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that's always so interesting, is to see the different ways and avenues that the story takes.
All right, so shall we move on now to the tunnels, to the sort of climax and end of the episode?
I think that's a good idea.
All right, so after the break, after the interlude with our new friend, the man searching for the Great Diviner, what we have is this mad push where Mallory gets involved with this cameraman who is a wonderful tipped NPC. Brilliant, brilliant tip, have to say.
I think Amir had a lot of fun with that scene as well.
Oh, absolutely. And then having the radar come up with the idea that they are going to absolutely utilize this cameraman to help cause a distraction so that they can utilize these tunnels and go break Tibby out. That was so fantastic. And so, yeah, the whole scene with Mallory, with the cameraman, I was laughing so hard.
Yeah, I mean, Matt has done such a great job of portraying that kind of element of Mallory that, I mean, from a character that a lot of us really could not stand. I mean, even in season one, to a character that is almost likable despite himself.
No, absolutely. Like, I'm beginning to absolutely love Kolok Mallory just because of how completely at odds with the world he is, and just because he is so perfect of an 18-year-old teenage ass. He's great at it. Like, that is exactly what that character is. And he's so good at it. And so we get Mallory, the car ride, all of that. And then the radar sets out to the tunnels. And actually, we actually have another great NPC tip that was put in, because otherwise we would not have had the scientist
Yeah, I mean, I missed the tip. So I mean, when I was watching it, if I didn't know, I would have never thought that was something that had been kind of added via tip. Because I mean, it just kind of fit in so well.
And I mean, that's how great it is that Kolak has this interactivity. That anything that you throw at Zach, he's going to be able to weave in, and you're not going to be able to really tell what was tip, what wasn't, unless you're really paying attention, unless you're really, really watching. And I absolutely love that, because unless, like, until Zach said something, he could have absolutely brought the cameraman in and not said anything, and everyone would have just expected that that was something that Zach had planned.
Oh, yeah, he does a great job of kind of weaving this in, either, like, with the scientist directly into the story, or through his more kind of driver character with the cameraman.
And I think that speaks to how interactive Kolak truly is. Like, everyone can be a part, everyone can contribute, you know? And you can completely shift the story, because had that tip not come in for the cameraman, had the tip not come in for the scientist, you're not going to have that interactivity. You're not going to necessarily have the situation that we see at the end really happen.
Yep.
Because those two characters ultimately lead us down this rabbit hole that ends up creating the storm the radar find themselves in for the last 30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I found interesting, speaking of kind of the labels, we got two more, whether they're just labels or not, but I don't know, in my mind, I tended to add them. We had the collective, and then the lab, which, I mean, that could just be any lab, but the way that he said it, it seemed more...
Oh, yeah, there's something else going on there. That's certainly a new label to include. And so we have this amazing sort of rush. We have the collective, we have the lab, and then we have this rush straight to the end where everything is sort of just piling and piling and piling. It's very much like how the soundtrack will build and build and build and build. We see the episode just building and building and building as they start to go through these tunnels and they encounter scientists. So they have that interaction. And this is where Cheese makes this sort of fatal mistake, we'll say, being so willing to jump in, being so willing to want to play the hero.
But again, it makes perfect sense.
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense that he would want to, 100%. But from our meta perspective, we know that playing the hero in Kolak doesn't end well, ever.
Nope.
And so I think from the moment she sort of said that I want to be the hero, he really sealed his fate.
Well, that and I think the poor, I think it was a brains roll that he missed may have also contributed to that.
Well, the dice certainly weren't in his favor a couple of times. But then again, the dice have been very, very touchy this season. I don't know what's happened, but maybe we need some new dice. I don't know. And so we build. They have the encounter. They get the tears. They go to where they have to break Tibby out. And then not only do they get Tibby out, we finally meet his mother, who we've heard so much about.
Oh, yes.
We meet his mother, but we also get our encounter with the sheriff. The sheriff who we know, thanks to the rumors, may be getting replaced from episode one. Because that was part of the rumor that won. Well, tied. Kolak gets a cult. And Kolak gets a new sheriff. And they're certainly going to need a new sheriff after this.
Yep.
So that was, you know, obviously a huge plot point that was absolutely predicated on Chat involvement. Had Chat not been that influential in choosing gets a new sheriff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was wondering, like I said, given his name, I was wondering if I had missed something and this was the new sheriff. That I just kind of missed something. Just given the name, it just seems so, like you mentioned, on the nose. Yeah. But
And then, so we have our big clash between the radar, between them and the sheriff, who obviously was not an average man.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that, as we found out, that at this point, Cheese had been taking a number of these pills.
Right.
How much is this that we're seeing solely from his perspective of him tripping, and how much of it is, yeah, there's something weird.
I mean, I think it's probably safe to say that something is weird given how ingrained or how familiar he seemed with the tears.
Well, I mean, also, I mean, we don't know too much about them, but him being the sheriff, it might make more sense because who else is going to deal with a drug problem?
Who else is going to help keep a drug problem going?
I mean, that's certainly possible. We don't know. Like, I mean, it's one of those things where there's so many shadings. And given the fact that some of what we saw, we know was through the lens of kind of Jesus being high as a kite.
His haze. Absolutely. And so you have all of those things. And then ultimately you get the final confrontation where we see probably a Mickey, prime A Mickey, finally just have enough and take care, so to speak, of the situation by killing the sheriff. And I think that's probably one of the best, the best examples we have of something that is 100% prime A.
Yeah, I think prime B Mickey still has that capacity, but as she mentioned earlier, she's actively trying not to be that person. So yeah, I think this is definitely one of those cases where it was kind of a strong suspicion that this is indeed prime A Mickey. The one thing I thought that was interesting, though, was, again, maybe this is Zach's made me so paranoid now that I'm kind of latching on to every little thing. But when Mickey went to remove the ego, it almost seemed like there was something different or not quite the normal when that was removed.
Right.
Then, of course, we get the very creepy and not at all unnerving final act. Again, whether this is seen through Cheese's drug, where we see that the sheriff kind of bite down on the capsule and then wink at them as he falls, doesn't seem like the kind of thing a normal person would do.
Right. So we have that. And then we have poor, poor, poor melted cheese.
Though the one other thing that I thought was interesting is the fact that apparently whatever, I'm assuming it's the tears, but since we weren't ever specifically told, is when Tibby tried to heal him, he had a visceral and immediate reaction to that.
I would go ahead and say, yeah, I would go with 100% the tears. Because we've never seen Tibby have any other problem aside from when he tried to heal Cheese. He was even able to bring people back from a severe state of decomposition.
Oh, he was able to bring people back from the dead.
That's what I'm saying. Like, not even the dead, but I'm saying Sky had been, like,
oh, yeah,
decomposed, and he was able to bring her back.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I just wasn't sure given the opening and the fact that there were a couple of different fruits mentioned, I wonder whether maybe there is either more than one drug or more than one variation of the drug.
I'm not sure, but I mean, even in like This Will Be Deleted, Zach said that, you know, there was a very specific reason why he mentioned how many pills, that there's always four, no matter what fruit the bags are in.
Five.
There's always that specific number that are in these airtight containers.
Oh, yeah. I just wonder whether the fact that there was watermelons, peaches, and apples, whether that's just different, so it's not all the same thing, or whether the drugs in the watermelon, the drugs in the peach, the drugs in the apple are either different or slightly different.
I mean, that's a possibility. Until we say anything otherwise, I'd say they're probably all the same, but it's something that could easily be shifted by a new scene, by a new whatever.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, at this point, everything that we've seen in Kolok, Zach's got me to the point where I'm like, this is different. Is this intentional? Zach makes very many intentional things.
Oh, absolutely. He's really great at getting you to run down that rabbit hole full speed ahead, not realize there's a brick wall behind it, and slam your head against it.
Oh, yes. And you had to love Mika's reaction to Zach's final pun.
That was just hilarious. Just the Zachary, it was great. And, you know, I hope that in some way, shape, or form, we get Cheese back, whether it's from another universe, whether it's something. I really would love to see him back at the table because he did bring such an earnest energy to the table. It was just so much fun to have him there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it kind of reminded me almost of a Tibby from like season one.
Back in the day, Tibby.
Yeah, Tibby before he kind of got pulled through all this.
Absolutely. All right. So any final thoughts before we start talking about some of the amazing fan art?
I think I've said all I can think of. I'm sure there's a bunch of things I didn't get to and that I'll think of. But
what about you, Logan? Any final thoughts on the episode before we move into talking about some of the...
There was only one other thing, the loss of time in the tunnel. There was some speculation that it was Mike Mikkelsen involved in that.
But definitely, that's a great point to bring up and remind our listeners too. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, since we had mentioned Rachel's diary before, it also brought up the fact that apparently we are not quite as done with it as we may have thought.
I really hope that we get a chance to see exactly what was on that page, but I know we probably won't. All right, so one of the things that we want to shout out everyone who's been doing the amazing Kolok 1991 fan art. Y'all have been just killing it, absolutely killing it. Barking Darrow, you continue to put up some amazing, amazing art day in and day out. Ambivert Ninja, your beautiful, beautiful Cassandra was just amazing. Have y'all seen anything else y'all want to shout out?
That's most of the stuff I've seen, but I mean, yeah, especially the Cassandra one was incredible. We'll try and retweet what we can on the Kolok podcast account.
Absolutely. It deserves to be seen far and wide. It was so great. And hey, if you have any other artwork, anything like that, that you want to pull in, just make sure you tweet it at us and we will be more than happy to mention it in the podcast, retweet it to everyone so everyone can see it. Now, we did have a couple of responses to a tweet that we threw out on Twitter asking what people's general thoughts are going forward on season two. The amazing artist Ambivert Ninja said that season two started off even better than I imagined. I feel like the way the characters were introduced perfectly sets up how their personal stories are going to be in the season. Also, really glad that we're diving into more small town mysteries and horror. Excited for more spook. And I have to agree, I am very much excited that we're dipping back into the horror genre.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm also kind of glad that we're as much as I enjoyed and really found a lot of the kind of bigger, kind of almost cosmic level stuff that we started to deal with at the end of season one. It's kind of nice to kind of get back to the kind of small town nature of Kolok. And there's so many kind of mysteries and secrets, I think, that are still remain to be mined in Kolok in and of itself. Yeah, I really agree that I'm excited to see them diving more into the mysteries of Kolok itself.
Absolutely. And while there are a lot of other mysteries at play in this world, I think it's a better scale for teenagers to be investigating what's going on in their hometown. It makes more sense why they would care that much more than about these cosmic level events. All right. And our second tweet that we got was from Andre Tucker Kev. Asking, how scary is season two so far compared to season one? How scary is season two compared to the other parts of the Phobos saga? 10 Candles, Kids on Bikes playtest. I would say season two is already setting itself up to be up at least a few notches higher on the scare meter than season one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not a very good gauge because generally speaking, I'm not one that really goes for kind of horror or scary stuff, Kolok being kind of an exception. But yeah, I can certainly see that, especially with some of the descriptions and the more kind of horrific aspects that we didn't quite get into with kind of what happened to that scientist when they were fighting him and whatnot.
Right. I would say that Kolok season one was probably like a 3-4 on what I would consider my 1 to 10 scale of horror. I'd say Kids on Bikes was probably around a 5 to a 7. And 10 Candles was anywhere from like a 7 to a 9. I think season two is setting itself up to be more in the 5 to 7 range. Obviously, it's definitely already hitting some of those boundaries beyond what was shown on season one. All right. So thank you so much for joining us here at Back at the Start. I have been Sapoin.
This is Eridance.
And this is Logan.
Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you back at the start.
Thank you for listening to Back at the Start, a fan discussion podcast for the tabletop live play show, Kolok 1991 on HyperRPG. Your hosts for today were Eridan SC, Sepuin, and Logan Pars. This podcast was edited by Eridan SC and recorded on September 7th. Special thanks to Ray Weiss for the introduction and outro soundbite, and to Zach Lim Eubank for giving permission for us to use it. Kolok 1991 is streamed live every Monday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on twitch.tv/hyperrpg and is available on demand via Twitch and YouTube. It is also available in podcast form. Just search for Kolok 1991 on your favorite podcasting platform. You can follow us at Kolok Pod on Twitter for updates and to interact with us about the show. You can also email us at backatthestartpod clarityclub@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening, and...
You found yourself back at the start.